Just to repeat for the recording, the question was, and for Cliff, the question is, what brings one out of the last, what brings one out of bed in the morning? And what is that moment when the last breath arrives? How is that moment? And I've been... great comments so far. Recently, I'm contemplating various choices, where I want to go with my life, and what's the priorities. And a friend of mine about it, and an email, and she wrote me back this great category of how to know if she's like that. Well, go for that when your cheeks turn red and you feel like the most excited about it, you know, like some kind of like inner warmth and happiness that just comes along with a thought about it. And, you know, I mean, we do have, I have, you have probably events in our life that, like, that sound really exciting. And I don't know what it would be for you. You know, could be a movie, or could be whatever, you know, like something that we'd be like, oh, I'm really looking forward to this. And so, but in the moment of the last breath, there's nothing to look forward anymore, right? So what would it be in my last moment that I still would feel like, you know, getting red cheeks and feeling really excited, you know? And I guess, like, one, you know, I don't know what language you're using to describe your experience, but in the Buddhist realm, the language that's being described is the qualities of who we already are. And these qualities are love, and compassion and wisdom, luminosity and clarity. That's who we are. And when I hear words like love, compassion, I mean, I do get pissed, you know, excited about it, because I do have moments in my life in relationships to other people, or in relationships even in nature, where I would say, oh, that's a very warming a moment, or a very nourishing moment, and I can see how I seek that moment out in my life. I don't know if you have something like that, where you feel like you're actually getting excited about it, and it could be your dog. You know? Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, right? But that quality of it has a quality of... Yeah, what is it? Nurturance, or sustain, being sustained. And how much would I wish in my last moment to feel sustained? Right? I don't know what your beliefs are about death, but... And actually, they don't really matter, because the last moment of life is life. So it's like a certain sustainability and support and nurturance. That we are. But that we seek out, and that the teaching tells me now that I am, already are. So that has been in the Buddhist teaching tradition. It has been a big conversation topic that I'm just bringing into this one too. Like, did you hear about? Do you heard about Buddha nature? That's a technical term for that in the Buddhist teaching. And the dog comes in there. In that topic too. Mm. But I'm trying to also pull out different words, and maybe if you throw some words in there too that makes it more tangible for us. Because some of these conversations have been happened hundreds of years ago.
I love this topic because it's something that I think that, you know, fundamentally in our practice we end up at, mm-hmm. you know? We can start with it, but ultimately we end up with this question in our practice or in our life, you know? So it's been something that I've enjoyed contemplating throughout my practice, and it started when I love this terminology that I think Dogen or someone says for Shikantaza, where the directions is to be upright, present for the moment, and consciousness before thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I...
Consciousness before thought.
Consciousness before mm-hmm. thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember kind of sitting up. I was, okay, I'm upright, and then present for the moment. And I kind of got stuck there, you know? And so I started to, you know, feel, okay, be present for the moment. And the deeper I got into that contemplation, the more that I realized there was no being present for the moment. There was just presence,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so for me, when I kind of like contemplate that last breath, or for some reason in my meditation, I have these weird scenarios that play out my death, you know? Like, you know, I fall down this cliff and I'm laying there, and, you know, slowly but surely my body, you know, my organs fail, or I'm punctured in the lung or something like that, and I die, and I kind of like fantasize this process of dying. And sometimes they're scary deaths and sometimes they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason my mind does that. And what always comes to me in that last moment, I try to experience what that is when the body dies, you know. And then I'm left again with that presence,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
just presence, which mm-hmm. I think is kind of like what you said, one way that the Buddhists have said it for a long time is Buddha nature.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, what really speaks to it is presence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like how I can take that experience and play with it a little bit in my practice is instead of to be present, mm-hmm. try to feel presence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be upright and feel presence.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
This is a difficult question. I know. I recently got out of jail. I was there for 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And while in jail, what is it that got me out of my bunk every morning?
Mm-hmm.
To get up and go to the chow hall and just eat awful food and converse with everybody in their stripes. What I found was all the men were striving to survive and to find a way to live, and just being there, and every once in a while see a spark of life in somebody to assist in that and to do something to bring. To bring an addict, for example, a little closer to not wanting a mm-hmm. drug or to live without a drug, that is part of what took me out of my bunk
mm-hmm.
every morning, to find a way to encourage life in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Also to... to be able to teach my children not to make the mistakes that I made.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that brought me, got me out of my bunk. What, when that last breath comes out,
mm-hmm.
and the next one doesn't want to come in, the only thing I can think of that would go in my mind is, uh-oh,
yeah.
there's, and, And at that point, there's really nothing else but just acceptance and accept it as it is.
I think you'll be able to tell from what I say that I'm not really a serious person, and this won't be very helpful. But in the morning, when I get up, my job, we get up early, and my job, because my wife goes off to work, is to make tea, kimon tea with honey. So I get up, and it always amazes me how conscious I am when I wake up. Like, I'm already guilty. I already feel guilty because... one of the precepts, I think, one of the long precepts, which I kind of incorporated in my basic precepts, is once the alarm goes off, to stay in bed is an abomination.
Abomination?
And I love that word. And then the long list of monk precepts, like the 260 list. So when I'm lying there, like this morning, we didn't get up at 5:30, it was more like 6:30, and thinking, to stay in bed is an abomination. So I wake up feeling a little guilty, but then the craving for honey and tea drags me out of bed. And there is a dog. I wait too long. He knows the ritual. And then I was thinking about death just yesterday, mm-hmm. and thinking about Chekhov, and when he was dying, I maybe tuberculosis, but he ordered it. Bottle of champagne, and I've always hoped that my last breath, I have this alcoholic tendency as well. In the morning I get out of bed because it's tea, and then when I die, I would really like to have time to order a bottle of vodka to go. And to me, that is like clarity and luminosity, and have a really good bottle. A fluted glass with champagne.
Boit or semi boit? Boit or semi boit?
Yes?
On a lighter note, I heard that the Irish writer, Oscar Wilde, or English writer, I don't know, when he was on his deathbed, mm-hmm. he was looking around the room and he said, the wallpaper in here is so horrible.
That reminds me of a couple of lines. One of the when Buddha's teachings, what is the idea? And it was something like to participate in life, in the sorrows of life, with great joy, mm-hmm. being the essence of our teaching. Mm-hmm. There was another one that came from Joseph Campbell, I think, that said, infinite gratitude toward the past, infinite attention or service to the future and the quenchable wage, mm-hmm. and infinite responsibility for the future. I'm sorry, attention to the present. Mm-hmm. And the final one, uh-huh. Viktor Frankl wrote a book on.
Can you first repeat the second one again? It was infinite
gratitude
for the past.
Infinite responsibility. Service, I think, was the way he put it. Uh-huh. In the present. Mm-hmm. And infinite responsibility for the future. And this is outside the realm of Buddhism, but Viktor Frankl, I think, wrote a book about his experiences in World War II and the concentration camps, and it was titled The Search for Meaning. Yeah. What he was saying as a psychologist was that the survivors were those who found some meaning.
Right.
Mm.
Those who had meaning.
Right.
I had that book in jail. It was very I could say one experience. It was at Thanksgiving, where it was my first major holiday in jail, and the first, and that morning I did not get out of bed, and I missed my children, I missed my my friends, and I had a very hard time getting out of bed, and eventually other inmates came to me and basically told me that I needed to get out of bed, simply because what I was doing was not helpful for the other inmates. And it gets, I think that goes back to the fourth noble truth of, if you want to sum it up real quickly, is don't be sucky. Because it really sucks up everybody else's experience also. So it was Thanksgiving, and everybody was getting out of their bunks, and just as much for everybody else, to keep everybody else's spirits up, up high, as it was for themselves.
Right.
So, yes, I was taught a lesson in manners. So that was very important.
Years ago, I had a really rough flight, it was about 10, 12 years ago, and I was really afraid to fly after that. And so I just kind of used that as a meditation, you know, what do I do with that? Because, I mean, I was terrified. And so I thought and meditated on it, and finally I got it. Something came to me, and I realized what I would do that helped me, and that was to go to someone else who's more afraid than I am. So
Cliff.
Thank you. Cliff said about the service. I mean, immediately I realized how that would take me out of myself.
Right.
And so it was really a nice insight. I don't know if that really fits with what we're talking about.
But. Oh, totally.
So now I still am not comfortable, but I mean, I can live with it. You have to fly.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that it's a good question. And it's probably one we could ask ourselves daily and maybe even get a different response.
Yeah.
And also the thought came that if we believe that we, you know, we choose to be born, so also we would have to choose to die at some point too. So maybe just one little perspective is that when that moment comes, that maybe we actually we have chosen it, and to actually be responsible for that choice to say, oh, you know, maybe it's not all about fear or giving something up. Maybe it's like I've taken my time and now I'm taking my exit, and all the pain and sorrow and joy and wonderful and painful experiences that go with that, you know, just kind of accepting it all, and it's just a very personal thing. It's probably the most personal thing that could ever be, really.
I like what you're saying, that because it's so personal, that it's probably day-to-day different, because the circumstances of our lives are different day-to-day, and so but it also brings up to me our responses. The two things. So one is the one that we know the most. We're just going into the story to get on the same level, but you probably heard it all. There's a story about the Zen master who got asked about Buddha nature. And it's one of these stories that try to, you know, they try to mess with your mind. So the student comes to the teacher and he says, does a dog have Buddha nature? And first the teacher says, yes. And then the student says, so why is he in those forms? Why are we in these forms? Why are we in the skin bags? Why are we in this body? Basically. And the teacher says, because Buddha nature willingly and joyfully transgresses, right? Joyfully chooses to have form. It joyfully manifests as form. So the second time student comes around and says, why does a dog have Buddha nature? And she just says, no, doesn't have. And then he says, well, everything has Buddha nature. Like, everything is wisdom and compassion. Everything is the luminosity of this life. There's life everywhere, you know? How come it doesn't have Buddha nature? He's saying, well, because it, of karmic consciousness, or because of impulsive consciousness, still following after impulses. So the way I'm taking it today, the story is like, you don't have your nature if you don't engage it. If you don't, you don't have the qualities of love and compassion and wisdom that we are if you don't engage it, which is an impulsive consciousness, which is a not being present, kind of like that. So that's the story I wanted to put out about choice, because like, choice can be a tricky question, because there are people who die way too early, and they're certainly, if you ask them in the last breath, them dying, they're like, I did not choose to die right now. I did not, you know. And so what's that choice, you know, Buddha nature coming and going? There is a certain mystery there of how our life unfolds, and that we are this mystery in the sense that we are what our circumstances make us.
I like that like distinction, because I think that there's a big difference between what makes us get out of bed in the morning and what happens at that last breath. It's almost like, you know, there's two aspects of who and what we are. There's this always beingness, mm-hmm. which is that Buddha nature, mm-hmm. Which is the choice, or is that which dictates birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the always becoming, mm-hmm. like the person that we are, the evolution of this conscious being,
mm-hmm.
that moves along and has a process of aging,
mm-hmm.
in between that birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
So the person only has choice in between that birth and death.
Mm-hmm.
So every morning getting up, there's that, you know, choice or intention to what we get up to and how we get up to it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then the birth and death is beyond personal choice and, like, you know, the idea that I choose when I'm born, or I choose when I die.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's beyond the intellectual discernment of, well, I think that I should be born in this era at this time. I don't know. I mean, those are all questions that we can just kick around, because
right.
we have no idea what it is until we get there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in the present moment of my experience, it seems that there's a distinction between, you know, that which makes the flower blossom,
mm-hmm.
and which that which creates an in-breath and an out-breath, which is totally involuntary, and then that which makes me get up out of the morning, and that which kind of dictates how I'm going to respond to
mm-hmm.
my life once I get up.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bodhidharma said, what did he say exactly? Although conditions may change, the mind never waxes or wanes.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can't bring in another breath, that's a condition.
Yes.
But what we do with our mind is totally within our control.
Yeah.
And the attitude, the what we do with our spirit is a choice. Conditions are another matter.
Yeah.
But
and it's tricky, you know. The word control here, or the word, yeah, we do have a choice, it's true. And yet, we are sometimes not conditioned to see the choice we have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes I think I have the choice like, for example, how often do I have the choice to run a red light or not? Mm. Right? A lot, but I don't see it because I'm conditioned to stop, and it's good, right? Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. But I'm just saying that some, for example, to really see, oh, we have a choice every moment. Mm-hmm. Am I conditioned to see my choice in every moment? I mean, and there's the things about responsibility I really like, mm-hmm. about being of service and being responsible. Like, response is like the response to a condition. Mm-hmm. And I heard this is the three difficult practices. Mm-hmm. Guess what they are? They're noticing what you do. It's difficult. To change it, what you do, is really difficult. And to keep doing that over and over is the most difficult. It's the three difficult practices. And sometimes it's like, oh, you know, you get hung up of like, how am I going to change it? Well, it doesn't matter how you're going to change it. Just change it, you know? For example, like, I'm a Facebook addict, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm a Facebook addict. give me a Facebook account. if I see my, like, time clock down on my just checking out what other people posted on that thing, there, you know, it can be like a long stream of like, oh my gosh, half an hour is gone. Or it could be like, oh, I'm here like for 10 minutes, I'm here for 5 minutes. No, like, I can boil it down. Or it can be like, I'm doing this, do I really need to do it? And how much control do I have, you know? Because there's something behind me that drives it. So, I guess there's this conditioning of the control in a way. I still like what the Zen school is saying here, of saying, well, the control is to give it a large feel and observe it. Like, basically, you boil it down of, like, noticing you, like, wasted a whole half hour on the Facebook, mm-hmm. to, like, oh, it was just 5 minutes, to, like, oh, here I am, I'm about to turn towards Facebook and what's happening. I mean, one has to, like, boil it down, to that moment of choice when it's really, when it's happening, because our conditioning is sometimes not that clear to catch that moment of that choice where we really have it. And even more if we are in relationship with other people, because, you know, how often are we in a relationship with somebody, or, and we do what we are conditioned to do, is which we look for our survival. And then how can we actually turn towards, I want to care for the other person. I want to care for the other person even more than I care for myself. You know? There's a certain... To come to that place, to really see I have a choice, to meet the other person out of openness or out of self-protection. And I really like what you said about that. If you are in the place of feeling really miserable, to look for somebody who is more, you know, like finding a spot of openness and curiosity is already a big entrance. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So the thought of responsibility and being of service, mm-hmm. to me, I think about when I'm really in that place of being of service, it's no problem getting out of bed. Mm-hmm. And it's like really can pull me forward in everything I do. And then I was thinking about being with my mother when she passed away 8 years ago and watching her last breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even in that place, you can be of service.
Yeah.
Because you're, you know, like if you're feeling like not getting out of bed in the morning and yet you're affecting other people around you that are, you know, they're affected by that experience.
Mm.
Well, it's the same thing with someone, we're watching someone die.
Yeah.
They're leading us through that. They're showing us the way. And to not resist that. So there again, choice and being of service is what I see.
Mm-hmm.
What Annie said, which was great, reminds me of
I've been part of 12-step programs for quite some time in my life, and one of the most important aspects of a 12-step program is the 12-step, which is being of service.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that they say that no one will ever be able to maintain sobriety of body and mind without getting out of themselves by helping another person, mm-hmm. another being suffering, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, I think that ultimately, you know, that's with every spiritual practice. You know, we can't evolve and flourish and blossom as spiritual beings if we're not finding the capacity to be of service compassionately, mm-hmm. you know.
And it's a high tall calling, tall order.
Yeah. And just one other thing, to what you were saying about the choice and realizing that we have the choice.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite teaching in the 12-step program is the Serenity Prayer, which I'm sure we're all aware of.
Yeah.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's still like fundamental to having a fulfilled life and a fulfilled moment-to-moment experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have to say, I love that. And the way that I find that I love it the most is when I really spend myself in all the ways of good words that have been said here.
Uh-huh.
And then when I actually go to bed, it's a great appreciation. So, and the same thing, it's a metaphor for life in general. So, I don't know. I have to do that. In some ways, I can't. I don't have a choice, in a way. It's not a choice. It's something, as you can name it, it's something that's in me to do that. I also don't think that the idea of getting up is necessary. There's something that happens where I awaken, and I'm conscious, and I have no choice whether or not to be conscious in that way of being out of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I'm a certain way, I don't really have a choice, it seems like, to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, two things I wanted to mention. One was based on the wish and the insight that we want to be of service and we want to give, and how fulfilling that is. Especially for us, I've been raised pretty Christian, I don't know about you, but there is a certain, that light of being of service has a little, you know, we can feel very guilty about it because it has a certain structure, how we would brought up, some of us have been brought up, who have been brought up Christians. And the best entrance I actually found in the Buddhist context was wanting to be of service or wanting to extend ourselves for others and loving others. The entrance to it is our ability to receive love. If we don't able to receive love, then we're not able to give. And of course, you know, I'm picky, you're picky, you know, I mean, like, where do we, you know, even our most dearest life partner, sometimes we think, well, that's not very loving, you know, I mean, there's a certain kind of, you know, inability to see that what's coming towards me is actually love. Mm-hmm. So in order to condition ourselves or to train ourselves, there's an exercise that I really enjoy doing. Actually, it's also a poem that I brought, but I'm not sure if you have time. No. which is going around and like really seeing where love comes forward, and like if it's a smile of somebody or it's just anybody letting you into the line or, you know, or in the streets, I mean, you know, letting you in or whatever. I mean, there are moments of kindness and love that are happening. And again, why are they happening? If I'm not sure if it's necessarily a choice, I like really the fact that that's how we are. We want that, and we are that. About getting up in the morning, I heard before I started, in my first year of starting meditation, I heard, well, because the last breath is, there's like a certain, the way we fall asleep and the way we wake up is very similar to the way we die and the way we get born. Mm-hmm. And we have those experiences and those moments of consciousness every night where we can see them. And we see, when we watch them, there's a certain, dullness and a certain clarity that balance each other. Those, they're like, kind of like dance with each other, right? And I'm not sure how much of a dreamer you are, but, people really lose a dreamer, some are not. So there are these images that come up when we fall asleep and the images that come up when we wake up. So the instruction I heard that as soon as to train ourselves, as soon as we are in those states, especially when we wake up in the morning, to be able to take refuge in the three truths, which is awakening and the teachings and the community of those who practice it, to turn towards them, like kind of it's like a faith, making a direction or turning towards something. Which is basically what we, like today we celebrated totally the Sangha jewel, all the wisdom coming forward, and the wisdom of goodness that we are, and the teachings of goodness, and the goodness itself. So we are turning towards, and we can do that with a phrase, or we can do it with just an inner intention, or whatever, not maybe not even words, right? It doesn't have to be words. And so this inner turning. But, of course, in these states, that's like one of the most difficult things to do. Like I heard of this instruction 15 years ago. I haven't been able to do it so far, okay? But it's one instruction that makes sense. It kind of makes sense to, like, first of all, when we are the most clear in a waking state, to clarify what is it what I want to turn to in my life, and then bring that, what you want to turn towards, into those states that are the most confused or unclear, like into our clarity. And that seems to be also a metaphor for all of life, like the whole life's purpose of, like, okay, here I am somewhat clear, where is the unclarity and where can I extend the clarity and the light and the love into all these areas and spread it, and then that's going to touch everybody. I mean, it's kind of contributing to this world.
I really like that idea of cultivating that, like a mental habit of doing that first thing.
Yes.
It's great.
Yes. So there's conditions of lunch. and I'm sorry that in the words there's a certain aloofness in it that have, like, experience and words sometimes don't have a hard time to. And that's why these two places of receiving our life in the morning or in our last moment, thinking about those experientially, I think that was like this amazing gift that came today in here with you and talking to you. What comes out? So I learned from you today. I really appreciate your comment, and I invite you to keep that conversation going with your loved ones or